Well, I wonder whether Mark sandwiches the cleansing of the temple in between the two instances of the fig tree, as well as them kind of being in kind of order with how the events happened. But there are some particular things, or peculiar things, sorry, in these two or three instances about Jesus. He seems to be acting and reacting in ways that perhaps we don't see anywhere else. But actually, I think the two or the three encounters together help us to understand a little bit more about what's going on. So just to set the context, Jesus has rode into Jerusalem on a donkey, and the people have been praising him and shouting Hosanna. So that's the context. We'll be looking at that probably next week on Palm Sunday. But then he decides to go to the temple, and on the way to the temple, he and his disciples see this fig tree. We're told that Jesus is hungry, there's leaves on the tree, and so he goes over to see if there's any fruit. Well, there isn't any fruit on the tree. So Jesus says, "May no one ever eat fruit again from you." The sense that Peter talks later on about the fact that Jesus has cursed the tree. And Mark is even worse, because Mark tells us it wasn't even the time for figs. So actually, you can hardly blame the tree, can you, if it's not his time? There wasn't any fruit on there. I feel a bit sorry for the tree, personally. But actually, Jesus reflects reality. We'll see in the last bit of the story of the fig tree that actually this tree was dead. No matter how full the leaves were, it was no longer producing fruit. But I wonder whether Mark is picking up on this story before Jesus goes into the temple and using the fig tree is almost like a little bit of a living parable to help us to understand what is about to happen. So maybe we can look at it, the fig tree, as a dramatically acted parable. Because then Jesus heads to the temple, and in particular, he goes to the court of the Gentiles. This was the place where the Gentiles could go. They could go no further into the temple than these temple courts if they wanted to worship Israel's God. Well, by Jesus' day, these courts, these Gentile courts, temple courts, had become a bustling marketplace. So pilgrims would flock to the temple, and because often they travelled long distances, they couldn't bring their own animal sacrifices. So they were forced to buy those animal sacrifices at the temple. But also they had to pay with temple currency. So it's a bit like Chris and Lindsay Hampton convert their pounds into Australian dollars to be able to do anything in Australia. Actually, they couldn't use the money. They had to convert their money as well. So these were why the money changers and the merchants were in the temples. Actually, they were there probably for quite legitimate reasons, to support people to get the right sacrificial animals and to be able to get the right currency. But what had happened over time is that they were ripping people off. It's presumed that they were charging high surcharges when they converted money. And they were asking people for premium prices in order to buy sacrificial animals. But I want us to put ourselves in those temple courts on that day. And just imagine trying to worship and to pray with all of the noise and the money and the kind of bustling of the marketplace behind or in the midst of trying to worship in that way. The irony was that God's plan for his people is that they would draw people, all nations, to worship God. But actually, what the religious leaders had done was exactly the opposite. They had made God's house into a den of robbers rather than a house of prayer. And when you read the two quotes that Jesus quotes in the passage, the two Old Testament quotes, one of them is from Jeremiah, which talks about the downfall of the temple. But the Isaiah passage speaks specifically about all of the nations gathering together to worship God. Actually, what the temple was meant to represent and the religious leaders, they were doing exactly the opposite of almost kind of dissuading the nations from coming. Rather than welcoming and helping people to encounter God, they were hindering and ostracizing people. So I don't think it was so much the merchants and the money changers were there, so much as their abuse of power that Jesus is objecting to. But I wonder, as we think about the cleansing of the temple, how many of you on your tables thought that Jesus got angry? Anybody? Yes. It does seem, doesn't it, that Jesus, and actually from my kind of knowledge as growing up, that's kind of how people have always kind of portrayed it to me, that Jesus was angry as he cleansed the temple. It doesn't actually say in any of the four Gospels, this is in all four Gospels, it doesn't actually use the words that Jesus was angry. There is some explicit language and maybe actions, but it doesn't actually say that in any of the Gospels. So, of course, we don't know for sure, but we can imagine that there were some emotions, at least, that Jesus was feeling just because of what he had seen about what his temple should be, that picture of what it should be, and actually what it had become and the impact on others. There is a time, isn't there, for righteous, godly reactions of frustration and anger if they lead to justice, but it's how we kind of display those emotions. The temple was meant to be the center of life and worship, an opportunity for people to meet with God, the place where God dwelt. But actually, what Jesus found was completely the opposite. So it seems to me that he needed to confront something of what he saw and the deadness of the temple with the way that he did. The temple, in effect, was like the fig tree. It was full of leaf. On the outside, it looked great. But actually, when you looked in, there was no fruit. Outwardly, it was religious. Inwardly, it was dead. We can see how this fig tree is a living parable of what Jesus did in the temple. Jesus' rebuke for both the temple and the fig tree was stern, because actually this was about judgment on what the temple had become. So they encounter this fig tree. Jesus cleanses the temple. The next day, they go out away from the temple, and on their journey back, they come to the fig tree again. And it's Peter that notices that this fig tree has withered at the root. And rather than trying to explain anything of what's happened when Peter highlights it, all that Jesus says to his disciples is, have faith in God. It's not maybe the answer that we might be expecting Jesus to give. He simply says, have faith in God. As we think about this fig tree being a parable and how that might connect with what we've just thought about, what the encounter in the temple, it's pretty clear to me that ultimately the temple withered because it disconnected itself from God. There was no longer that connection with God. And I wonder whether Jesus' response is a reminder for his disciples and for us that we are called to root ourselves in God and Jesus if we are to flourish and produce fruit for the kingdom. Walking by faith, trusting God, is at the root of what it means to be a follower of Jesus. Actually, I want to say that we don't need to work hard to produce fruit. If we root ourselves in Jesus, actually that fruit will often happen organically. It's kind of an outpouring of us being rooted in Jesus. It's simply the fruit will grow. But I wonder whether, as followers of Jesus, whether it's really easy to be like that fig tree. We might look quite leafy on the outside, but actually what Jesus is interested in, ultimately, is what is happening for us. What does it look like on the inside? I want to say that I think it's really easy to get into a pattern of kind of religiously looking good on the outside, but neglecting our spiritual roots. So I wonder how good we are at tending our spiritual inner lives, our spiritual roots. At our core, I think that everybody is spiritual at some different level, in some different way. There's a spirituality about everybody. But actually, what Jesus wants to draw out is a rhythm and pacing, worship and prayer, which is built into the very fabric of who we are. It is really easy, isn't it, to get distracted and busy in life. Our schedules are often too full. Our screens are often always on or rarely put away. It's difficult to pursue Jesus with all that we are. We fill our lives with good things. But actually, what Jesus is aching to do is to fill our lives with the best things that will enable us to cultivate spiritual roots that go deep, to strengthen our walk by faith, and to allow that to produce kingdom fruit. Jesus finishes this passage by talking about faith and prayer and forgiveness, and maybe one day we'll go through the last bit of this passage. But it seems to me the things that Jesus pulls out as he speaks about faith and prayer and forgiveness are the things of foundations which we can build our lives on as Christians. You know, often today we read often about self-care. How do we look after ourselves? Well, actually, I want us to think about, what does our root care look like? What does it look like to care for what's happening inside? The good news is that the physical temple was not God's ultimate solution for his people. His ultimate solution was, in fact, Jesus. Jesus is the way we as sinful people can be totally cleansed and connected and rooted with God. Some of you might know on Good Friday we'll read the passage where when Jesus died on the cross, the curtain in the temple was ripped dramatically in two from top to bottom, reminding us that actually there was now a direct connection between God and his people. Jesus becomes our high, perfect high priest, that spotless lamb that we sang about earlier on. It is through him that every nation, tribe, and tongue can come to God and will one day worship and bow before God in heaven. Jesus longs to do in our lives what he did in those temple courts, to drive out that dead, dull religion and replace it with vibrant faith. But actually, to do that, he needs to be invited into our lives. And as individuals and as a church, we are now the new temple, God dwelling in us. And we are charged with the same temple thing that the temple was charged with, to go and show Jesus and his light in the world. When Jesus came to that fig tree, he wanted fruit, but all he found was leaves. When he came to the temple, he wanted fruit, but all he found was religious activity which had little or nothing to do with God. As he comes to us today, I wonder what he finds in my life and in you. What does he find within us as he comes to us and gives us the invitation to come in and replace dead religion with vibrant faith.